Valentine's Day is the biggest day of the year for florists, but it falls in the dead of winter. So where are all those beautiful flowers coming from? This hour, we'll find out. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. Florist Dan Brabeck is the owner of Coe's Flowers and Gifts in Ames. I'll talk with him about where our Valentine flowers are grown, how they get here, and how best to take care of them when we get our hands on them. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will also be here to answer your questions about the plants in your life as you plan for spring. 866-780-9100. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and Valentine's Day is just a little over a week away. According to the National Retail Federation, 37.8% of Americans will buy Valentine flowers this year, spending a total of $2.1 billion. Flower producers have been busy producing approximately 250 million roses for the holiday, and not surprisingly, it is the single biggest business day for florists all over the United States. Florist Dan Brabeck is the owner of Coe's Flowers and Gifts in Ames. He's also teaching a class on flower arranging in the horticulture department at Iowa State University this semester, and he is with us today. Hello, Dan.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
That is a lot of roses. Of course, there are many other kinds of flowers being produced for Valentine's Day. Where are they grown?
Most of the flowers we get at the shop come from overseas, so South America, Ecuador. And a lot of the roses that that we get in are primarily grown in Ecuador.
All right. And are they grown in greenhouses or in fields of roses?
Most of the production is outdoor production, especially because they have the climate there that's conducive to growing those beautiful blooms. There are boutique roses that are grown here in the U.S. under glass in greenhouses, but most of them come from South America.
All right. And that's a long way to travel. So how long before roses, for example, would arrive in your shop, would they have been cut?
Typically, on average, you're looking at 4 to 6 days that they've been cut and in storage before they arrive in our facility. They do have a detailed process that they use at the grower in order to ensure that the roses get chilled and cooled down properly before they go into transportation and then are brought over into the U.S.
And are they refrigerated as they're transferred too?
It's kind of a neat process from what we've learned just from our floral suppliers here. When they bundle the roses and they actually pack them at the facility, they put them into large aerated boxes that they then put in front of super huge cooling fans. And the fans pull all of the air out of the rose boxes to cool the roses down to about 38 degrees. And then the roses are actually held at that temperature in refrigerated storage when they come over into the U.S. and then through the transportation chain from brokerages like in Miami or on the coasts.
Wow. And it all has to happen really fast, too. Fast and cold. Are they in water?
You can get Percona packs that are actually packed in water, but most of the roses that we get are dry packed. And then we go through quite an extensive hydration process when they come into the shop to start to hydrate the flowers and get them to waken up, as they say.
So what do you do?
When they come into the store, we have kind of a three-step process that we use. First, we unpack the roses and clean off any of the foliages or materials that are left on the stem. Then we cut the flowers at an angle and put them into a hydration solution called Quick Dip. And they stay in there for 5 to 6 seconds. And then from there, they go into a room temperature hydration solution, a floral preservative that they then drink for 2 hours before they get put into the cooler.
What kind of a variety of flowers do you get? I mean, red roses, of course, are the symbol of Valentine's Day in many ways, and that's the first kind of flower that we think about. But how do you diversify?
Well, trends kind of change over the years based on what the floral industry is promoting and what our consumers are looking for. And it just depends on what the customer's personal preference is. We do sell a lot of lilies and a lot of orchids and a lot of delphinium and stock and tulips. Tulips are always a big seller here in the Midwest just because we're so inundated with snow that everybody's ready for spring.
Yes, that's true. But also a lot of tulips, you can buy them where they're actually planted, so they're growing. Is there an idea that those will last longer if you buy bulbs that are actually growing in soil?
Absolutely. And we do sell something at the shop called a bulb garden that a lot of our producers grow for us. And they have an assortment of tulips and daffodils and hyacinths and crocus and all of the bulbs together in one garden. And then they're great for our customers because they will bloom for 2 or 3 weeks afterwards. And then the customer can plant the bulbs outside in the fall.
Do you recommend that people plan ahead? Do you have people who reserve roses for Valentine's Day or who make a plan ahead of time?
You always have the customers that will call you 2 weeks in advance because they're Johnny on the spot and they have everything all planned out. And then you always have the other guys that are there 10 minutes before you close on Valentine's Day with breathing a sigh of relief that you are still open and that they didn't miss it. So it's kind of the whole gamut when it comes to a customer.
Well, and I know that still statistically speaking, more men than women buy flowers on Valentine's Day. But have you seen a trend there? Is that changing?
Not as of yet. It's still mostly men as a customer. As far as women purchasing, they're not always purchasing for their sweetheart. Sometimes they're purchasing, you know, for their parents or for their children to have a special treat for them at school. So, but in general, it's mostly the guys that we see once a year.
All right. And so you come into the shop, and let's say you come in well before closing. So there's still a variety. How do you pick a good bouquet?
Of course, beauty is always in the eye of the beholder. But what I try to tell customers is that you can either go with the traditional roses for Valentine's Day, or you could go with the sentiment of spring with lots of mixed blooms and mixed colors, something that lasts longer. Roses are the traditional flower for the holiday, but some customers are more in tune with having something that'll last longer for their sweetheart.
And do other flowers just generally last longer than roses?
Absolutely. Daisies and carnations, some of the delphiniums and stock that we like to use, even the spider mums or bells of Ireland. Some of those other blooms last a lot longer. So it's nice to have that bouquet that'll express a sentiment for several weeks.
When you're picking roses, someone gave me advice many years ago about feeling the blossom to see if there's firmness in the bud or that kind of thing. What do you do? Do you have advice?
Absolutely. And that is definitely a good technique. And that is something that we use in our cooler as well. When the bud is tight like that, you know that the flower core of that actual rose has not been spent, meaning that the bud is still going to open and all of the petals are going to bloom for you. When I talk to a customer about trying to prolong the life of their roses, I always tell them the key is fresh water. So every 2 to 3 days, you want to make sure that you put fresh water in the vase with the floral preservative, that you give the stems a fresh cut. And some customers ask, how do they know that it's time for fresh water? And as soon as you see the vase water getting murky or cloudy and some grime building up at the top of the vase, you know that it's time for fresh water.
All right. And a fresh cut every time?
A fresh cut every time.
All right. And what's in the flower preservative?
Well, I'm not a chemist, but it is a mixture of sugar solution and nutrients. And there is actually a little bit of a powdered bleach in there that helps to keep the water clear. Basically, that preservative is cleaning and feeding. So the bleach helps to keep the water clear so the flowers can drink it. And the sugar solution helps to feed the blooms.
All right. And I always wonder, is this really making a difference? Have you done a side-by-side comparison? Does it really make a difference?
Absolutely. When I go into my clients' homes and I see a bouquet that we've delivered to them a week ago and it's not performing or it's not looking good, I go right over to the vase and A, there's no water in it, or B, it's sitting in a murky cloud of green water. So I really do think it makes a difference. And we do try as florists to keep all of our flowers in that cold chain so that they will perform at optimum performance for our customers.
Now, when you put flowers into arrangements, how do you make sure they're getting enough water and enough preservative? Because often when you give somebody an arrangement, that's just going to sit there.
Well, we're lucky at our store because we have a flower food injector that actually injects the correct amount of food solution into our room temperature water. So our injector actually mixes and proportions that right into our vases so we know they're getting the right amount of food. If you were going to be doing this at home, you would get the flower packets of preservative that come along with your flowers. And it gives instructions to mix that in a gallon of water. And so, especially with roses, I tell our customers to mix that floral preservative in a gallon pitcher of water and just keep it in your kitchen. And then keep adding that fresh water into your flowers as it's needed. So that way, you don't have to try and mix the preservative each time.
Okay. Now, this is not your first Valentine's Day, obviously. Does the fact that Valentine's Day is on a Saturday this year, will that affect your business?
It does affect our business. As a whole, they usually, the industry, when we go and place our flower orders in advance, we typically would expect a 20 to 25% decrease in orders for having Valentine's Day on a weekend. However, I find that when we're getting into Valentine's Day in the winter, that we do sell quite a bit of flowers when it's this cold and snowy.
So people are dreaming of spring even more.
Absolutely.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with florist Dan Brabeck. He's the owner of Coe's Flowers and Gifts in Ames. He's also teaching a class on flower arranging in the horticulture department at Iowa State University this semester. ISU Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will also join us in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Yes, you're lovely with your smile so warm and your cheeks so soft. There is nothing for me but to love you and the way you look tonight.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. We've been looking ahead to Valentine's Day and talking about cut flowers so far this hour. But you are welcome to join our conversation with your questions about any of the plants in your life or the plants you're hoping to have in your life once spring actually comes. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, florist Dan Brabeck. He's the owner of Coe's Flowers and Gifts in Ames, and Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome.
And Dan, let me ask you another question about cut flowers. So when I do get that bouquet home, do you have just some basic advice for how to make it look nice in a vase?
Well, I always tell customers, the first thing that you want to do is try and give it a nice shape. So you want to arrange the flowers all the way around the container. And the key to giving a bouquet a nice shape is to insert your flower stems into your vase at a 90-degree angle. And what that does is to kind of help your blooms to protrude out in an aesthetically pleasing way and to kind of give you a nice rounded shape.
So don't stick them in straight up and down.
Absolutely.
And do you need to cut them different lengths?
Well, that depends on the type of flower. You know, some of your bulb flowers like tulips and things like that will actually keep growing and elongating in your design. So when we use those in the shop, I always try to cut them shorter than my design, knowing that they're going to, you know, grow towards the sun and actually grow in your design. But as far as different heights, you would want to just have it in proportion to the size of vase or container that you're putting them in.
Well, and you mentioned growing toward the sun. When somebody gives somebody cut flowers, I don't think most of us think about light. Do cut flowers need to be in a sunny location?
They do definitely enjoy the sun in your home. We've had instances where flowers have not performed, and we question the customer about where the flowers were located in their home, and inevitably they were right under a heating duct or frying in a south window with no water. So you just want to be mindful or conscious of where you would put it in your home. But if you have a plant or fresh flowers that you keep in a dark hallway, they're certainly not going to perform as well.
All right. So flowers that you get at the office, that's probably just a terrible place for them, most offices.
At least you can watch them for water.
All right. You're welcome to join our conversation, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Charles is on the line first in Waterloo. Hi, Charles. Charles, are you there?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Gerald, but that's fine.
Oh, okay. What's your question?
I've got a question on prairie grass. I got about 2 acres of prairie grass that's established about 15 years. About my pond, and I burn it off about every 2 or 3 years, and I was just wondering if it'll hurt the plants or if it's all right to burn that off every spring, just more for aesthetic purposes than anything else. If burning it every year will harm the plants or if it's all right.
Burning it every year will not harm the plants, no. We typically do rotate maybe every third or fourth year and burn it, but you could do it every year if you wanted to.
All right. I was just wondering. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Gerald. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. A lot of people are planning for spring, thinking about starting seeds, thinking about their spring gardens. If you have any questions, again, 866-780-9100. Richard, do you have a preference as far as Valentine's flowers?
I kind of like the spring bulbs, the tulips, the daffodils, something that you can enjoy for quite some time. To me, they're more Iowa, and they're long-term, so.
And is that something you've seen growing, Dan? I feel like I see a lot more of those than I used to.
Absolutely. With the aesthetic kind of going towards that minimalist, clean, contemporary look, a lot of clients really like just the simple look of several dozen tulips arranged in a bowl or some long, beautiful iris or daffodils. It's just welcomes you to spring.
And I think every spring a lot of people have this thought when they see those beautiful spring bulbs at the florist or wherever they're shopping and, you know, in lovely designs, they think, oh, you know, I should have forced some bulbs. Those would make wonderful gifts. That's a pretty long process, right, Richard?
It is. You have to pot those up, and then they need a cold period for 12 to 16 weeks that induces the actual flower to form. And then after that, it takes about 2 or 3 weeks after that. So you're talking maybe 18, 20 weeks. So you have to plan ahead, and when they come in the store, let's say at the garden center in the fall, that's when you want to pot them up.
All right, so you really have to plan ahead. Plus, you have to have that cold storage space. What kind of a space is ideal for that?
A second refrigerator. That would be ideal, where you can put them in there, because what they need is a temperature just above freezing.
Okay, and so if the garage may not be a good idea. Because
right,
it's
it might fluctuate
cold,
quite
right.
a bit, right? So if you have a second refrigerator down in the basement, if there's plenty of space, you can do it there, and that works terrific because if you set it just above freezing, it's ideal.
And If they're in a refrigerator, is there a problem with dehydration?
Typically, they'll dry out a little bit, and so you may want to check on those periodically. And when the potting soil is drying out, go ahead and water them. During that time, they will be developing a good root system, so they do need that moisture. So go ahead and check periodically and water when needed.
All right. So doing the math, I mean, if you want to give people lovely spring bulb gifts, you really do need to think about it in October or November.
September.
September? Oh,
yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah.
I'll never do that.
yes, you will.
I don't think I can plan that long term. Have you done it before?
I've done it, yes. Yeah, it's easy to do. It's really easy to do. The biggest problem is, where do you put them during those 12 to 16 weeks? If you have that second refrigerator, it works terrific. Otherwise, you have to find a place. You could put them outside in a trench, cover them with straw, but if we have some really bad weather and they get covered with snow and ice, they're hard to kind of dig up. So the refrigerator really is ideal if you have the space.
All right. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We had a lot of snow this week. I know that makes people worry about their trees and their shrubs. If you have any questions, give us a call. 866-780-9100. Susan is on the line in Windsor Heights. Hi, Susan.
Hi. We're one of the people who suffered tree damage from the recent storm. We have a large pine tree in our front yard that was about 80 feet tall. A couple years ago, one of the spires was twisted off and damaged and had to be removed in a storm. Now, this last snowstorm, another tall spire has twisted and come down. What remains of the tree, there's only one spire left, and it's leaning toward the house. So we're thinking the whole thing's going to have to come down. So my question is, what would be a good replacement tree? The tree, the pine is about 10 or 12 yards from the house. It's next to the driveway, and closer to the street, much closer to the street, is a mature oak tree that's probably in the same 80-foot tall range. So we're looking for suggestions about a tree to replace the pine tree.
Okay. Well, if you want another evergreen, we really don't have that many good choices. I would look at either a white pine,
okay,
which is native to northeast Iowa. I would look at the Norway spruce.
Okay.
And also the white or concolor fir.
Say the last one again, please.
White or concolor fir. The concolor fir is a very pretty tree. It's very, very dense. It kind of reminds me somewhat of a Colorado blue spruce in that the foliage can be kind of a bluish-green color. It's very dense, okay? Very pretty tree. The Norway spruce is a big tree also, but it's more open. It has kind of drooping branches, very distinctive shape to it.
I know what you mean.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then the white pine is very common too. It has a very narrow, very long, very flexible needles, very distinctive too. Those are the best as far as the evergreens for Iowa.
Okay. What if we decided to go in a different direction?
Of a
tall tree that, well, one that will eventually be tall, but more compact, and because we're concerned about, given the spread of the oak, we're thinking that whatever we replace it with has to be fairly vertical and not have a wide spread.
Okay. Well, I would probably do an inventory of your yard and maybe try to plant something different, add something different. And the nice thing is there are a number of cultivars of your very common trees where you have some that are columnar in shape, okay? For example, There are some very nice columnar lindens.
Uh-huh.
Some very nice columnar maples. And some very nice columnar oaks. So we have some of these trees that are more columnar. It's not their normal shape, but there are some varieties that are more columnar in shape.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's very helpful. Very helpful. We hate to lose this pine. It's been a beauty, but, you know, it seems like structurally it's beyond saving at this point.
Yeah, sometimes you just have to let it go, unfortunately, when it is no longer safe.
Susan, thank you so much for your call. You can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Dan Brabeck, the owner of Coe's Flowers and Gifts in Ames. And we have this question about cut flowers. This is from Cindy near Ames. She said, I buy flowers a few times a year and I like buying from local florists, but I've read disturbing stories about how many foreign flowers are grown with serious pesticide overuse and poor worker conditions. I'd like to buy green certified flowers, but they only seem to be available online. Are there florists in Iowa who sell them?
As far as green certified flowers, that's not necessarily something that would be available from our suppliers that we buy our flowers from. However, in the summer months, we do get a lot of flowers that come into our floral production chain that are grown here locally, like in Minnesota, in Kansas, in Missouri, that our local suppliers do source and that we do bring into the store. And even if she didn't get them from a local florist, there's always a lot of options, you know, at the local farmers markets and CSAs here in the area that she could source those green flowers here local.
Well, and of course, if you're buying flowers in the dead of winter, you know that
that they're not coming from the Midwest.
Right. there's been a big investment in getting them hauled across the continent. And
absolutely.
Yeah. So here's another question. This is from Pip. I've planted grapes 3 times. Every time they've died. Can you recommend a variety of table grapes that is hardy and tasty? I live in Northwest Polk County.
Okay. Now, grapes are not that hard to grow, actually, so I'm not sure what the problem is. Basically, all they need is a well-drained soil. They don't do well in wet soils, but if it's well-drained, it doesn't have to be actually even that fertile. As long as it's a well-drained soil, they should do fine. There are a number of cultivars that do fine in Iowa. We have a publication that they can find on the internet, Growing Grapes in Iowa, where we list various grape varieties, cultivars that do well.
All right. And back to the snow. This was such a heavy snow, and it's been so beautiful. But, you know, it snowed on Sunday for the most part, and bushes and trees are still weighed down by the snow today. Is that something we need to be worried about?
Well, yes. I went out the other day to some of the shrubs. Some of the shrubs are kind of a little bit flimsy. Others are pretty sturdy. And some of those were basically bending down to the ground. And so I went out the other day and I would grasp a branch or two near the base or fairly low down and simply shake it because I didn't know when it was going to melt. And I think at some point, if that snow stays there, they may actually break. So I did that. You want to do that, shake them fairly firmly, rather than beat them with like a shovel or a rake or whatever, because they're quite brittle when it's below freezing. So you want to be firm but gentle as you shake them. And I went out to basically some of the yews that were heavy with snow, the evergreen, some of the lilacs, some of the spireas, and I shook off the snow.
All right. And if, let's say, you didn't do that, should you do that today?
I think I probably would this afternoon when it gets above freezing, is go out there and try doing that. Get that weight off of there so they cannot break anymore at this point.
Okay, so the longer it stays on, the worse the outcome.
And if you don't do that, I think as the snow melts, it may just kind of pull them down to the ground a little bit too. So I would get it off if I could.
All right. And then, of course, it refreezes and they can freeze to the ground. Okay. This is a question from Laura. We planted 2 Blackhawk viburnum 2 years ago. We would like to move them. They're approximately 3 feet by 3 feet. What's the best way to move them?
Definitely doable. I would do that in the spring, probably early to mid-April before they leaf out. And I would just dig them up with a ball of dirt. I would say probably 2 foot in diameter. And put them right back in the ground. They should be fine.
All right. You can join our conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. We have a couple of lines open for you right now so we can get to your question right after our break. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, florist Dan Brabeck. He's the owner of Coe's Flowers and Gifts in Ames. So if you're planning on buying Valentine flowers this year, you want some advice about cut flowers, how to keep them nice, how to arrange them and make them beautiful, you can call us. Also, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron is with us as well to answer all of your other plant questions. 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Different size, and though I close my eyes, I see love and rose. When you press me to your heart, and in a world apart, a world where roses bloom. And when you speak, angels sing from above. Everyday void seems to turn into love.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and florist Dan Brabeck, who's the owner of Coe's Flowers and Gifts in Ames. They are here to answer your questions about the plants in your life and the Valentine's flowers you intend to purchase. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Tom is on the line next in Mason City. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I've got a couple of areas where I have elderberry. I've been there, they were here when I got to my property 30 years ago. They're kind of dying out some. I wanted to rejuvenate them, refresh them. I had over 20 pairs of Orioles last year. That's conservatives. And I contribute part of that to these elderberries, I believe. And also there's a lot of honeysuckle bush. But anyway, I have some coming from the State Forest Nursery.
Okay.
I'm just wondering, I'd like to also, in addition to rejuvenating the current ones, spread them to some other areas. And what's the best way to plant them? Space them and that sort of thing, please.
Well, they're a shrub and they spread quite a bit, or they can. If you have a big clump, you can just go out there early in the spring as soon as the ground is workable. And if you have a nice, sturdy shovel or spade, you can just dig up kind of a edge of the clump and transplant it elsewhere.
Okay, but I have some I ordered, from the State Forest Nursery coming. So, I've got to have some fresh ones. Can I just go in where they're existing and just stick them in there or help host?
You could plant those in a straight line if you want, in a row. I would space them probably at least 8 foot apart if you intend to do that.
Right,
because they can spread quite a bit over time.
I want them to spread. Okay. I want them to spread out. I want them to be I want as many as possible.
So you could plant them in a row. You could plant them kind of randomly in an area if you want. But I'd probably space
apart from each other. So if you do it randomly,
I would say about 6 to 8 foot. Is what I would do.
They're growing in these existing areas. I mean, they're like, foot apart from one another. They were, but they're kind of dying back out. They've been that way for years, but they're sort of dying off and not rejuvenating themselves.
Do you think that's part of the problem, Richard, that maybe they were too close together?
I'm not sure exactly, because they're not that hard to grow. They're native to Iowa. They typically like kind of a moist soil, typically they do very fine on their own. You'll see them in roadside ditches without any care whatsoever, and they're doing just fine.
Well, is it that the birds are getting them before the seeds get a chance to you know, rejuvenate, you know, or do they grow from suckers? Do they grow off of seeds? Do they spread from suckers or from seeds?
They spread from suckers. The plants do sucker from the base, so they will spread on their own. And obviously where they pop up new, they're coming up from seeds.
And birds are really good at spreading those
seeds.
Yes, they are. So you don't need to worry about them getting before the seeds, because that's part of the process. But Tom, thank you so much for your call and good luck. I hope they rejuvenate for you. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Jody is on the line in Fairfield. Hi, Jody. Jody, are you there?
Hi. Yes, thank you for taking my call. So I have two little boxwoods that I planted in front of my my walkway in front of my house, east facing. It gets somewhat a fair amount of sun, except when I have some huge trees, when they fill in, it doesn't get that much sun. But I haven't done anything over the winter to protect them. And then I was reading recently you're supposed to put some kind of netting on them and they can just die from the cold. So far they look mostly green. I shook off the snow. There's a little bit of brown here and there. I'm wondering if there's anything I can do to make sure that they make it.
Well, actually they're in a good location being on the east side. What can happen to them is that they can winter burn quite severely. And basically what happens is either the wind or the sun can dry them out during the winter months. And so if they were on a south side or west side, they're much more prone to that because they get more sun and more wind. On the east side, actually, they get protection. So they're in a good location. At this point, you really probably can't do anything. I would say as far as them getting through the winter, you really won't know until probably mid to late March. If they still look good by late March, they should be okay. But in the meantime, there's really not much to do.
Okay. And one other quick question. You know, in the spring and in the summer, how moist are you supposed to keep them? How often should you, you know, water them?
I would say if we're getting normal rainfall, they should be perfectly fine. If we have a prolonged dry period where it hasn't rained for maybe 3 or 4 weeks, then you might want to go ahead and water them. And as far as the winter injury, let's say we're having a very dry fall. September, October, November is very dry. To prevent winter injury, go ahead and water them in the fall maybe 3 or 4 times. Allow them to absorb some water before the ground freezes, and they'll be in much better shape.
Thank you.
And did you just plant them this year, Jody?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, so their first winter is always going to be their toughest.
Oh.
We've had, I would say, kind of a normal winter, nothing terrible like the previous winter. So I would be encouraged by it.
Okay, great.
Thank you very much. Yep, thanks a lot for your call. I asked her that because didn't a lot of boxwoods die last winter?
Yes, last winter was, well, the winter in hell, basically. It was just terrible. And it was rough on a lot of plant material, but this year it's more normal.
Yep.
More doable.
I think we're going to make it, actually. All right, 866-780-9100 is the number to call. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa with me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Geron and florist Dan Brabeck, who's the owner of Coe's Flowers and Gifts in Ames. Barb is on the line next in Kelowna. Hello, Barb.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
Okay, I live out in the country in an old farmhouse, and we recently put a new front porch so it faces north and east. And I've always planted 7 pots of ivy geraniums on the new porch, I guess the first time was last year. And ivy geraniums grow up and hang down gracefully, and they're filled with blooms. It's so beautiful. But I noticed this year I got too much shade, and I wondered if there was another kind of plant that I could pot that would kind of grow up in the pot and then gracefully down the sides and have a lot of blooms.
As far as a plant, I guess my first thought would be maybe some of the pansies. There are some new pansy varieties that are kind of drooping.
Will they last all summer?
No, they won't. They'll kind of give out by about mid to late July, but they're kind of nice to have in the spring of the year. They'll do really nicely in April and May and June. But then when it gets hot and humid in July, they kind of fade away. But that's one possibility that I see. Some of these newer pansy varieties. Possibly some of the New Guinean patiens would be a possibility. Right, New Guinean patiens. I would stay away from the common impatiens because they have a disease called downy mildew, which is becoming a severe problem. But the New Guinea impatiens are downy mildew resistant. So I would look into some of those. There's some really nice ones on the market.
All right. Well, what I did last summer was I kept taking the pots down and running them out in the yard so they wouldn't be in shade. And that did help them bloom, but I got kind of tired of running back and forth.
Yeah, rotating them. That works too. Yeah, rotating them back and forth. Yeah.
All right.
A fun hobby too, right?
Ideas.
All right, Barb. Yeah, thanks so much for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Bob is on the line in Pella. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's your question?
Well, I've noticed that a lot of the evergreen trees, and I'm not sure if these are spruce or pine, what variety, seem to be in decline in at least the southern part of Iowa. And even worse, as you go down into Missouri, my daughter lives in the Kansas City area. I see a lot of them dying there. The whole tops just turn brown on them over a period of 1 to 2 years, and they die back. And I'm wondering if I'm going to replant or plant some new evergreen trees, I have an acreage. Are there specific varieties that this applies to that are having problems that I should avoid? I'm talking about, southern exposure for me, and it's probably clay-type soil.
Yeah. There are a number of evergreens that we can grow here, but some of the evergreens have some really severe problems. For example, Austrian pine, Scotch pine, Colorado blue spruce, they all have some fairly serious disease problems, so I would tend to avoid them for the most part. And I would look at, basically, again, the white pine, the Norway spruce, and the white or common color fir. In my mind, those are still very reliable. And in a windbreak, I would also consider maybe the eastern red cedar, which some people consider to be a weed. But in a windbreak, it would be suitable for a windbreak. So.
Okay, well, I really appreciate your information. It's a great program and a great service. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Bob.
Bye-bye.
866-780-9100 is the number to call. And we have a question about cut flowers from Katrina in Ely. Hi, Katrina.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I always enjoy your show.
Thanks.
Thank you. My question is for your florist. When I get flowers from the florist with the little packets, I always have a little question in my mind as I am arranging them in vases and putting water in them about the type of water. We live in the country, and we have very hard water, so we use a softener system for our house, except for our drinking water. We do have reverse osmosis with little separate faucets for our drinking water. And my gut tells me to use the reverse osmosis water and add the packets into the flowers. But I've always wondered whether it makes any difference. Would the material that's in the packets from the florist neutralize the salt in the water, softened water? Does it make a difference?
I would say that you should use the reverse osmosis water just because it's going to be a better balance with all of the bleach and all of the nutrients that you're going to mix in there for the preservative. Some of your well water can have, some of those hard minerals and things in there that those flowers aren't used to. If you wanted to be 100% sure, you could always use distilled, but, I would definitely.
That was my next question.
Yeah. Okay. Absolutely.
Okay. Terrific. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. What do you use in the shop?
Well, we live in Ames, so we're very lucky
right,
to
have
some
best
of the best water,
water in the world.
So we do use tap water here, and like I said, we have the injector that already mixes our food for us, so we're kind of spoiled.
All right. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions. This is from Cecile. I'm not sure how to say this. I have a red-leafed tea plant. Is it T-I? Is that how you say it, Richard?
I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Plant that I bring indoors for the winter, and then I set it out in the summer. In the winter, the leaves dry up at the leaf tip end, and eventually I remove them. Do they need more or less water?
It may be the lack, the dry air inside, it may be that.
So lack of humidity in the air.
Right, right. That's very common in the wintertime in Iowa. And so what they might try doing is maybe getting a large saucer and putting in some pea gravel and adding some water and then placing the pot on top of the pea gravel, making sure the water level stays below the pot. That way you have water constantly evaporating from the saucer, keeping the air a little bit more humid in the area. You could also use, obviously, a humidifier. You can group your plants together so they provide more humidity to the air, that type of thing. But I think it might be the dry air.
Okay, keep them in the bathroom.
That works too.
All right.
Bathroom or kitchen.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Larry is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Larry.
Hi there. How are you this morning?
Good. What's your question?
I have a question. I have in my kitchen, I have an east-facing window that's low, and I would love to put a blooming house plant there, except it's right over a heating vent, and nothing that I've ever put there seems to do well. And I'm wondering if you have a suggestion for a flower that could withstand a heating vent once in a while.
Boy, the heating vent is kind of tough on flowers. They
Maybe
dry out.
Maybe a bromeliad?
Possibly.
What was your suggestion, Dan?
Bromeliads.
Right. It's got a very unique flower. It's more of a fleshy type thing, so that might be a possibility. You can find those at garden centers and greenhouses. It belongs to the same family as the pineapple. And so, and it's very, very showy for quite a long time. So that might be a possibility.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I've killed a lot of flowers there, and I'm looking for one that can survive.
All right. Thank you very much for your call, Larry. And next we'll go to Jeremy in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi.
What's your question?
Valentine's is right around the corner, and I was always told that there are different meanings or different flowers symbolize different things to the person you give them to. And I was just wondering about some differences, like what flowers mean what, you know?
Is there something in particular that you're trying to say? Maybe Dan could help that way.
Well, no, not exactly. I just maybe wouldn't want to say the wrong thing if I were.
All right, Dan, I bet you've helped out with this problem before.
Absolutely. Red, of course, if we were just looking into roses, red roses would mean love. Pink roses typically mean sweetheart. Yellow roses are always given in instances for a scholar or wisdom or knowledge, and white is typically for peace. So those would be your colors there. If you want to say I love you to someone, it doesn't always have to be roses. If you don't know what to say in the sentiment, it's better to be safe with a mixture of spring blooms.
All right, Jeremy, good luck with that. Dan, thank you so much for being here today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Dan Brabeck is the owner of Coe's Flowers and Gifts in Ames. He's also teaching a class on flower arranging in the Hort Department at Iowa State University this semester. And Richard Giron, thank you.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. And it's a little early, but we'll say happy Valentine's Day now. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, Claire Roth, and Julia Davis. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.